Hello and welcome. This is the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Derek.
And this is Tank. So Tank has a story this week. So I went to Barnesville, Oklahoma. And that is, not only is that the home of Ben, but that's the home of Voice of the Martyrs. And have you all heard of Voice of the Martyrs?
Oh, yeah.
Ministry? Yeah. Have you, Derek?
Yes, I've heard of Voice of the Martyrs, yep.
Cool. So I was hanging out with my wife's youth pastor. He invited us up there just to hang out and spend the night before we head off to Japan. And it was a really, really good experience. He's on the international missions team, so he actually goes to all the countries and works with the persecuted church. And just some of the stories of what he's seen, how they help, what they do. It was a lot of fun. So just a little info on Voice of the Martyrs real quick, is they are basically their goal. He said if they have $1 left to spend, they will spend it on a family who has a family member that was either killed or sent to jail. So that's what the vast majority of their money goes to. They hear a story about someone who was martyred for the gospel or put in jail for the gospel. They go to their family and say, what can we do? Here's money to keep your kids in school. Here's food to pay for supplies, money to pay for food, I mean. And then beyond that, since they actually receive quite a good amount of support, they also will buy stuff to spread the gospel, like Bibles and motorcycles and stuff like that, to support pastors spreading the gospel. And he said, we don't use our money to fly white guys around the world. Like, all of our money goes to the indigenous church. Like, that's their goal, is 100% of the money, obviously, aside from administration and stuff. But they don't fly white pastors to a conference. They'll pay for an entire indigenous church to go to the conference, but the white guy has to pay himself, he said.
Gotcha.
So that's just their heart. But it was really cool just to see. We got to tour the building and see that place at work, and see like their museum, where one of the most impacting things, and I'll just tell this story and end my experience about it. But he showed us in their little museum they have, he showed us a bike, and it had a picture of a man with a bike, with that bike, and a drum on it. And he said they disperse these bikes all over India. And what this man that they had a picture of in particular does, he puts a drum on his bike and he rides around the villages and he starts banging his drum. And so people from the village come to see what is he doing. And then he proclaims the gospel. And he said it can go either two ways. One, it goes really well. People believe and are celebrating, and they get to start a local church there.
Mm-hmm.
The other way it goes is they beat him until he's unconscious.
Oh.
Yeah, and he said, my friend that I was with, he was talking to this guy, and he asked the guy, what do you do when you're beat unconscious? He says, when I wake up, I get on my bike and ride to the next village.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So, wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so it was just a great experience, really learning about the persecuted church and how, I mean, we just hear very small stories and it blows up in the news on occasion with like ISIS, but it's an everyday thing for people all around the world and in so many countries. He showed me the map of hostile, which means the people hate the people, and restricted, which means the government hate the Christians. And it's just all over the world and they're serving people every day. So anyway, check out Voice of the Martyrs if you haven't yet. And they have a newsletter where you can hear stories monthly. They have a podcast, which I've been listening to. Yeah, been really enjoying it. So anyway, that was very impactful to me this week.
Very cool.
Thanks for sharing, Tank. Well, we have a good bit of feedback and follow-up and just a lot of stuff to talk about at the beginning of this episode. First off, This is Ben. Now, you guys say who you are.
Derek is Derek.
And this is Tank. I just told the whole story.
Someone told us that they couldn't distinguish the voices from one another. This is Ben, by the way, still. and that we needed to say each other's names a lot more. So, Derek, what do you think about that?
You know what, Ben? Derek feels really great about that. about this decision. Derek's just going to keep referring to himself throughout the entire episode. It probably won't work very well, but we'll see. We'll see how this goes. Derek is not going to continue referring to himself throughout the entire episode.
You did the best job of that. Tank and I tried it, and we... This is Ben, by the way. And we really just... It was a struggle. It was a struggle.
Yeah, yeah.
Tank.
Craig is not here to lend his voice or his name to the entire process, but he's the one with the accent, so...
Yeah, he shouldn't be hard to pick out of a lineup.
Exactly. He should be the easiest to identify out of everyone. And this is still Derek.
In case that wasn't clear, this has been.
Also, this also this week, in response to the whole laptop thing, there's one thing we didn't quite get to, which was a suggestion about talking about the iPad as a laptop. David McCookie.
McCookie?
Dang it.
Right? Isn't that right, Tank?
McDonald's cookie.
McCookie.
That's what he taught us.
So David said in the Slack in episode discussion that he would say the best laptop is the one that does everything you need it to do without giving you any headaches. And for him, that is an iPad Pro with a Magic Keyboard. And I'm really curious about this whole moving to iPad life. I have an iPad for work that I use, and I have a keyboard with it that I've found it to be way more useful than I thought it would. It is an iPad Air, so I can't do all the... It's the original iPad Air, so I can't do all the cool split-screen multitasking things with it. But, yeah, I can see where he's coming from. There's everything... you know what you're getting into with an iPad. And it's simple, and it does what it does well. And you don't have to worry about a lot of complications that a laptop brings up. There are different difficulties, but, yeah, good feedback.
I don't think I could do that, go iPad full-time, because of coding.
Yeah. I could. I mean, there are, like, plain text stuff. Like, if you're talking about, like, running compilers and stuff, yeah, I can see where that's an issue. But so the idea of replacing an iPad with a laptop, or replacing a laptop with an iPad, was discussed in the first episode of Helvetic, a podcast, which I'll link to in the show notes here. So, but check that out. It's an interesting episode.
Speaking of Helvetic, a podcast, they recorded an episode two weeks ago, maybe now, as we're recording this, with Marcus Pittman, who's one of the folks involved at Apologia Studios, Apologia TV, Apologia Radio, Apologia Church, Apologia America.
Apologia Smart Car.
Apologia Smart Car, yes. And I don't know about you guys. I love Apologia Studios. They put out a lot of great content.
Mm-hmm.
Don't necessarily agree with them on every single point of doctrine, but love them. And they had Marcus on the show, and they mentioned our comments about our VR episode, in which we talked about pornography driving technology forward sometimes as an industry, just because I think we were quoting somebody, and the quote was, you know, there's so much money in the porn business that if they back something, then it's sure to win. And there are stats out there that prove that they push the Blu-ray split or over HD DVD and things like that. And that's kind of what we were talking about. I just wanted to clarify that we were not lauding pornography as anything positive or moral or even creative. I would agree with Marcus that it is bottom of the barrel as far as creativity goes. But that really wasn't what we were talking about. We were talking about the unfortunate state of the world, which is that money tends to make things happen. Mm-hmm. In our society, and that seems to be where a lot of people want to spend their money, as sad and unfortunate as that is.
Yeah, yep. Agreed. The idea is more about that people will buy things that they find value in, and sadly a lot of people find a lot of value in porn, and if pornography is backing a certain technology, people will be more likely to invest in that technology because they find value in porn. It's not that porn is a magical, like the porn industry is a magical creative production machine. It's that there's so much demand for porn that it tends to drive some technological changes over the years.
And that's certainly not the only factor in technology moving forward. Of course, it may not even be the most important. I would argue that money certainly is. Whether or not that's directly connected to that particular industry may be a topic of debate or discussion.
Right.
But, things like storage space and just, Moore's law, so to speak, of more transistors in smaller amount of space, that certainly drives the whole industry forward as well. It's not just that one issue. But anyway, we just wanted to give a little bit of clarity on what we were saying and what we meant, and certainly some things we didn't mean, just as, guys who love Jesus and believe the Bible.
right.
Just like the guys at Helvetic and just like Marcus. So.
And one final piece of follow-up was the people pointing out that there is a workaround for the Amazon, for Amazon Prime not being, like Amazon Prime Video, whatever it's called, not being on Apple TV. And that is to download the Amazon app onto your iOS device and AirPlay it to the Apple TV. Yes, we are aware of this.
I've done it, actually.
Yeah.
For the entire season, first season of, what's that show on Amazon Prime Video that everyone likes?
Oh, I don't know.
You know where Hitler wins World War II?
Whoa. That sounds actually really interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty good. What's it called, though?
I don't know.
Man in the High Castle, that's it.
Okay.
Man in the High Castle. Yeah, Amazon Prime users can get the first season of that. I think it's only 10 episodes. It was good.
Cool.
And shall we get into the news?
Yes. Yes, we shall. This is Tech You Should Know, the part of the show where we bring you 7 tech news stories from throughout the past week that we feel are worth your consideration. Stitcher has been bought for $4.5 million from streaming service Deezer, who just bought it a year and a half ago. It's one of the largest podcast platforms out there right now, with 8 million registered users and 65,000 podcasts in its library. Stitcher will operate as part of Midroll Media, one of the largest podcast advertising networks.
Derek, you're not a very big fan of Stitcher, are you?
No, their terms are really crappy.
And we're not on Stitcher, are we?
No.
So if you're listening to this, you're not using Stitcher, are you?
If you are listening to us on Stitcher, let us know so we can talk to Stitcher about it. They do not have the rights to this show.
Do you want to explain why? We've probably done that before.
I don't know. I have to look at their terms again. I read their terms a while back and just knew that it was not something we wanted to really be a part of, because you don't get... It's its own closed-off deal that it represents a podcasting world that I'm not a fan of. It's very closed, and it inserts ads where you don't want them to, and you don't get any kickback for any of those ads. You don't get any benefit from being on Stitcher, except that they have, 8 million registered users.
They also change your audio file, don't they? Don't they reduce the quality?
Yes, that too. They host it themselves. It's just kind of all not great. So... But the podcast landscape's a-changin', and this is would be a signifier of it. As Marco Arment pointed out in a blog post a while back, big money is coming to podcasting, and it looks like it is doing that now. Facebook is being a jerk and taking all your options of avoiding the Messenger app away from you. When you go to the Facebook web app and try to use the messaging feature built into Facebook, this would be on your mobile phone, you will now get a notice saying that, quote, your conversations are moving to Messenger, and that soon you'll only be able to view your messages from within the Messenger app. Of course, Facebook's reasoning is that they can't provide the best experience possible in the web app, but it's still pretty annoying to force upon a user an app that is a necessary part of the Facebook platform.
Whoa. Let me pause you. Let me pause the news real quick.
Yes.
I went to look because I had a hunch that actually what's motivating this is that Facebook just wants Messenger to show up in the top charts all the time, which it consistently does. And I went to look and see if it was number one. It's number four. But do you know what's number two right now?
What's number two?
The brand new Chick-fil-A app.
Yes, the Chick-fil-A app. I knew it was at number one for a while.
That's awesome. How did I not know about this? I'm downloading it now.
It was like in headlines too and stuff.
I can't believe I missed this.
You get free food. That's pretty much the reason that it's at number one.
I was unaware of this as well. Looks like I need to download it.
There you go.
Nice.
Tech you should use this week. Maybe next week, depending
the
on
the app we just found.
Tony Fadell is leaving Nest after rumors of turmoil within the company. Many people have speculated about how much longer Fadell would be permitted to be the CEO of Nest because of rumors of his strong personality, clashing with other employees, and some problems with the Dropcam acquisition. However, Fadell is leaving on his own terms and was planning on the move since last year, spurred by changes in expectations due to Google restructuring into Alphabet, and Nest having far more demands laid on it as a separate company under Alphabet. Who knows what the future of Nest is, but Fadell will not be a part of it anymore. T-Mobile is giving itself away to customers now in another very T-Mobile-y stunt. If you currently have a voice plan through the Un-carrier, or sign up, you get the same perk, you can claim a single share in the company, and two shares if you've had an account for at least 5 years. But not only is T-Mobile giving shares away, but pizza and movie tickets and a free hour of GoGo Wi-Fi on every flight with in-flight GoGo Wi-Fi. All you have to do is download the T-Mobile Tuesdays app and claim free stuff, like every Tuesday, I guess. This is such
Isn't
a T-Mobile
crazy?
Thing to do.
Yes. They're just desperate for more customers.
I don't even know if they're desperate anymore, but it's like, I don't know. I'd switch if I wasn't on a company plan.
I'm gonna switch for the record.
Sweet. Send me some free pizza.
Okay. I'll just have it overnighted to you.
Yeah, that works. Cold pizza is the best pizza. Snapchat overhauled the look of its Discover section in the Stories page, the part dedicated to publishers and more professional content on Snapchat. It used to be a section of nothing but logos in pretty colored circles until you tapped on them and looked at the content. But right now there are dynamic previews for individual stories, letting you see what you might be interested in looking at. You can now also subscribe to a channel by tapping and holding, and that will stay in your Stories section among your friends' stories.
Let me put the Snapchat's not cool thing to bed once and for all. Are you ready?
Go. Yeah.
This is still Ben, by the way. Okay, many people who have been listening to the show know that Craig and I have this thing where we go back and forth a little bit about how cool or lame Snapchat is. And I just want to say, a few days ago, I saw a tweet that said the following: SpaceX lands 70 million rockets successfully. Valuation, $12 billion. Snapchat has rainbow filters. Valuation, $20 billion. And that is a true fact. Here are some other crazy facts about Snapchat.
Oh,
Snapchat's
my
daily video views have increased 400% year on year. Snapchat ads are viewed up to 1 million times per day. Snapchat's video views are now greater than Facebook's. 60% of all smartphone users are now on Snapchat. Millennials account for 7 out of 10 Snapchatters. Snapchat now has more users than Twitter. Snapchat reaches 11% of Americans. 60% of Snapchat users are between the ages of 18 and 34. It would take, for the grand finale, it would take, this is still Ben, by the way, it would take 158 years to watch every Snapchat story.
Wow, I'm sorry, listeners. I had no idea what I was getting into when I decided to go with Ben's Snapchat story.
Oh, yeah.
The mic has been dropped.
Next week, Craig defends himself.
TensorFlow, Google's machine learning software that powers a lot of what Google does, including AlphaGo, is now available for developers to take advantage of on iOS. The neural network software, as Google describes it, can now be integrated into apps on iOS, making them way smarter and more capable. If you're an iOS developer interested in TensorFlow, you'll find it on GitHub, since Google open sourced it last November. And guess who was able to take the spotlight away from rumors of what will be announced at Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference this past week?
Microsoft.
Wrong. It was Apple.
Wait, you didn't see the after party thing?
What after party thing?
Microsoft is hosting a WWDC after party to try and lure iOS developers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did see that. But that didn't really make a whole lot of news. It was What I'm talking about is Phil Schiller just announced major changes coming to the App Store. The app review process for developers has been speeding up recently, and it's officially going to stay that way. Apple is reviewing about 100,000 apps per week and is able to review 50% of them within 24 hours. And I think it's like 90% for 48 hours, which is insane. They're adding more to its subscription model with more flexibility for developers and a change to its revenue split with developers, changing the split to 85-15 for all subscribers older than a year. There are also changes happening to help app discovery, with the most major being that developers will be able to pay to promote their app in search. So, Apple preempts Apple with news. apparently, this was announced now because WWDC is going to be so full. It'll be exciting. It'll be exciting. And that's all the tech you should know this week. If we left out something you think we should have considered, feel free to email us at ask@techreformation.com. For more tech you should know throughout the week, follow us on Twitter at @TechReformation. Tank, you look a little pixelated over there. You're not coming through quite clearly. It looks like someone might be throttling your data over there. Is that the yep. case? Or is that just me?
Been quite a bit throttled.
Oh, really? what would ever be throttling your data, Tank?
Well, this has throttled my data in the past, but it's one of those things, you know, you just push down deep and hope hope doesn't spew out of you at some point. But of course, as it always does whenever you just push it in. Brian Forbes in our Slack, he mentioned just the other day, a couple days ago maybe, he's talking about a website that he was signing up for, and the password requirement was at most 10 characters. Just in case you didn't catch that, it was at most 10 characters.
Oh, so that's terrible.
They had an upper limit on their passwords, which,
man,
I just can't imagine. It's like, here, sign up for your site. We're going to make sure it's not as secure as you may want it to be.
Right, I know. Especially when they're like, you cannot use special characters.
Or spaces. Yeah. At my old job, you were only allowed to have an 8-character password, and it had to be exactly 8. It wasn't max 8, it was exactly 8. Which, if you know anything about like security, when you know the number of characters, it drastically reduces security.
That's just awful.
Or probability, even if you don't know much about security.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just... I mean, used to, before LastPass, I never had longer than around 8 was probably my longest. But now that I have LastPass, it just, every time I create an account, I just say generate a password, and it's like 20 to 25 or whatever it sets itself to. But because there's no reason not to. Like, why not have a 20-character password or a 50-character password?
I'm like a 20 to 30. I think by default it's like 30 characters, which if you know that, it'll still take you like 2 million years to hack into my account. But especially banks are awful at this. Like, banks will often, they'll make sure that you have... Oh, well, here's the thing that really annoys me, is that when they require a letter, a number, and a special character to be used,
I was just going to say that, yep.
Because while that's not an issue for me, because I use randomized passwords, a lot of people who do that will then end up going with like a base password code and then just add, you know, some like a number or a character on there. And it's hard to remember it when passwords are harder to remember, people tend to use them more often, and thus they aren't secure on the internet because they use their passwords everywhere.
For reasons like those, I, for years, would just have about 2 or 3 passwords.
Yep, yep.
And
yep.
Add an exclamation point if I needed a special character.
Exactly.
That was it.
And then you would miss it, and you'd be like, all right, well, it's not that. Let's just add an exclamation point. All right, that worked.
Yep. Yep, I would cycle through my 3 passwords, and I'd get in every time. If anyone hacked one of my passwords, I was just completely hosed. You had everything.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, we mentioned this, I think, on our first episode when we talked about LastPass as tech you should use, and just to give a shout-out to 1Password, I've heard that's great as well. But the reason why it's bad to use the same password is, like, you may have your bank account password, and it's, like, super secure. The bank has done everything they should do. They probably haven't. They've done everything they should do. And nobody's getting that password. And then you sign up for blahblah.com, and they have literally done nothing to protect your password. You can just go to blahblah.com/passwords.json and you'll get all the passwords on their site.
passwords.json.
And if you use the same password, they don't have to hack the bank. They have to hack passwords.json, and then they use your email and password combination, try out Facebook, try out major banks, try out major credit cards, and if they have a lot of passwords to try, they're likely going to get in with those people who use the same password over and over again. And obviously, mm-hmm. passwords.json was an exaggeration, but websites get hacked all the time, and passwords get released. And if you use a different password everywhere, then one website of yours was hacked. If you use the same password everywhere, all the websites you're on were just hacked through that one security breach. So, moral of the story, use different passwords.
Yep.
And check out blahblah.com.
I'm sure it's
a
website.
Oh, wow. That sure is a website.
Yep.
Blahblah hosting. That's fun. So anyway, yeah, it just really bothers me whenever a website would purposely make something less secure. I'm not really sure why. Even more throttling is if you forgot your password and they send it back to you plain text. That's even worse. But
oh yeah, through email.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that means or they're storing it in their database plain text.
Even better, when they send you the password by default, like they'll just send, like when you sign up, they'll send you an email with your password in it so you don't forget it. It's been a while since I've seen that,
yeah,
but that
yeah,
definitely
yeah, I
happens.
Have seen that, yeah. But thanks. That's funny. So, I guess that's all from me.
That.
I'll push it down for another year or so.
That is what throttles Tank's data this week. This week's episode is brought to you by Olive Tree, the Bible study app for all of your devices that syncs everywhere you go. You can have it on your phone, you can have it on your computer, everywhere. There are a lot of fantastic features involved with Olive Tree. I've talked about the split window that lets you compare the Bible to a different commentary or different commentaries together, see what they talk about a certain subject. There's also a handy resource guide that will pull together all your commentaries, maps, study notes, and more into one place that you can quickly do an in-depth study on a particular passage. It's an incredibly handy feature. It allows to reference a lot of different resources at one time and to really get an idea of what the text says. Another feature I'm really digging is the ESV Strong's Bible. This would be a Bible that you can purchase and download. And It's really handy if there's a specific verse that I'm really having trouble understanding, like somehow the translation doesn't quite work into English that I'm having issues understanding. But you can, they have inline strongs, so you can tap on the word that's highlighted and see, you know, what does the Hebrew or the Greek mean. Now, obviously, you don't want to take that too seriously without, you know, proper language training, but it is really handy to kind of get a better idea of, oh, this might be what they meant here when they were translating it. Really handy, really easy to use, and I highly recommend you guys go check it out. If you wish to purchase any resources on olivetree.com, you can feel free to use our coupon code that is TRP16 to get 20% off any purchase you make. Really sweet. Thank you to Olive Tree for supporting Tech Reformation.
Hi, this is Cody, the host of the Ordinary Pastor podcast. I'd like to invite you to tune into this podcast weekly as we discuss ministry from an ordinary perspective, whether that's the perspective of the pastor, pastor's wife, missionaries, or lay people. We discuss all kinds of different topics on this show. You can find us on iTunes, Podbean, or find us through the Theology Mix Network. I hope you listen, hope you tune in, and may God bless you.
Now it's time for our main topic. This week, we're going to talk about whether or not we're all in the Matrix. If you don't know, it made some pretty big news probably 2 weeks ago now as we're recording that at the Recode conference, which they do once a year, Elon Musk, who is the CEO of SpaceX and Tesla, as well as a couple other companies that aren't quite as well known.
Solar City.
Yeah, OpenAI, a couple of those. Anyway, and this is the interesting thing, I think. I think Elon Musk is, like, widely known and accepted as one of the smartest people alive today. At least in his field, if not just period.
Yeah, and incredibly ambitious to boot.
Yes.
Like, he strikes me as, like, today's version of a mad scientist, to some extent.
For those who don't know, I guess I should say SpaceX is a company that's trying, basically their main goal is to land rockets on Mars and start civilization there. And then Tesla is a car company, so they make hybrid cars that are energy efficient. They started out pretty pricey, but now they've gotten them down to like more of a middle-end car where everyday consumers are getting them. Very widely known as good cars. Anyway.
I thought they were pure electric.
Or they are.
Pure electric.
I was reading about the Model S a couple days ago when I was listening to this, and I thought it was their first, maybe it was just their first hybrid.
No, it's their first consumer grade. It was like their first massively manufactured electric car. Like there was the Roadster there was the Tesla Roadster first. That was like a concept car that only a few people bought because it was so expensive. And then the Model S was their first real mass production car.
Okay, my mistake there.
Yep, they're all electric.
Yeah, and so they are doing a lot on the self-driving car front as well. Tesla is where they've already got a lot of like autopilot features, not full autopilot, but you know, kind of like the gimmicky it'll parallel park for you on the Honda commercials, but a little bit like more advanced than that.
Yeah pretty like sophisticated as far as it goes for right now. Yeah
that was a joke. Anyway, so Elon Musk is at this Code conference a couple weeks ago, and he talked a lot about the companies we just mentioned and just kind of the future of the technology industry, and they ended with a Q&A session where anyone who was there, you know, media, tech journalists, anybody could walk up to a mic and ask him a question. I believe it was the final question in like an hour-long interview with him, panel kind of interview with him, where basically the question was, are we living in a simulation? So... You know, think The Matrix as far as popular version of that. But how do we know we aren't brains in vats, essentially, is the question.
Well, not even just that we're brains in vats, but that we are simulated people in like we're basically the Sims of some advanced future civilization type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and we should mention now, it's like a little over a three-minute clip. It's in the show notes if you want to listen to it. Feel free to do that. You can pause us and go listen to that just to hear his full... I mean, I don't have any problem with you hearing his full argument, and I actually think it'll be better for our discussion if you do. I have some thoughts, which we'll get into. But, yeah, so that's kind of the state of things. Go ahead and pause this and listen to that, and then... we'll see you in 3 minutes.
So if you didn't listen, here is the short form of the argument. So essentially, we, in the past 40 years, we've gone from Pong to photorealistic images in virtual reality. And so if you assume that technology is going to keep getting better and better and better and never stop, even if it slows way down, if it just never stops getting better, eventually we're going to be able to create a world that is no different. Like, the brain thinks that there's no difference between that virtual world and ours. And so if we know that we can eventually create that world...
Even if it's, say, in, like, 10,000 years or so.
Yeah, and way off in the distance. Then the people in that world, maybe just simulations, we can basically make them think that... I mean, they will be able... Essentially, people in that world that are able to think and act like us. And so if we create this simulation that is like our past selves, and it is slowly working and working and working towards a better VR existence, then they can create a simulation, which that simulation can create a simulation. And so he's saying essentially that there's billions of these simulations out there, and why would we ever think that we were the prime existence, the one that created the simulations to begin with?
He uses the philosophical language of base reality, and what he means by that is we're the ones building simulations, so to speak. If this scenario existed, that we're not living in base reality, we're living in someone else's simulation, and they're in base reality.
Yeah, and so his two options kind of ended with is either the world gets destroyed and humanity can no longer progress technology to the point to where we can create these simulations, or... there's a billion simulations out there, and why would we think that we are the base reality? So that's the summation of it. He says stuff about hot tubs, though. I like
that. Yeah, the way that he put the last part you were just talking about, actually, I thought was really important also. He said at one point that we should hope that we're in a simulation. Because, and I think he may have actually said this twice, because if we're not in a simulation... he says, then civilization must have had some catastrophic event that caused it to cease to exist. And remember that this is built on a couple, several assumptions, but one very important one, which is he says you have to assume a rate of technology advancing, right? If you don't assume that, the whole thing falls apart. If you do assume that and you start there, that technology will continue to advance at any given rate, then at some point in the future, like Derek said, even if it's 10,000 years, then we will have to be able to make these types of simulations or civilization will cease to exist. That's kind of what he was asserting. Which is like a very, very strong assertion.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, I mean, he didn't say we are, but he did say the chance is one in billions that we are living in base reality. And basically, the guy who asked the question was like, so we are in a simulation. And he was like, well, tell me what's wrong with that argument. You know, it's one in billions, so we would seem to conclude, it seemed to lead to us to think that, you know, we're not in base reality. And so it was kind of like, he was, I think he was a little bit disguising the severity of his assertion there. Because even philosophers do not say... this is the way, like, we are in a simulation, undoubtedly. They would say, we can't rule that out, which there's a huge difference there.
He's, well, what he would be saying is that the probability would be incredibly high in his estimation, which is a little different than philosophy, I guess. Well, it is still a philosophical argument, but given that this is a likely thing to, that that we would be capable of creating, what's to say that we are also not, you know, in the simulation, and that likelihood would be actually very high if there were lots of people who, if we're just, you know, we could be like 10,000 down the chain as far as simulations go. But yeah, it's a little bit of a mind-bending, philosophy venture. I've heard the argument before on another podcast I used to listen to. I think it was How Stuff Works did an episode on simulations and this idea. I don't know, it's very fascinating. So how does this make you feel, Ben, being a member of possibly the 17th simulation to go down the tube?
Well, I don't know. I have lots of thoughts. Maybe two that I would mention up front. One is, it all has to do with where you start. Like, what I just kind of mentioned earlier, he starts with one major assumption, that technology is always going to increase. And I would also add, you know, some of the catastrophic event that ends civilization type of stuff. You know, how do we know that, like, even if you do assume that technology will continue to increase, how do we know that Jesus won't come back before we get to simulation type of level of, you know, compared with reality?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's sort of it's not catastrophic, but it is a civilization-ending event, right?
Yeah.
There's currently a civilization, and there will be a new one when Jesus comes and renews everything. So I don't know. Obviously, he would not entertain that idea.
Right.
But to me, the real issue is when you deny the God of the Bible, you are left in what Romans 1 calls futile thinking and a darkened heart. Because I was listening to this brilliant man who is much smarter than me. I will be the first to admit that. And I just kept thinking, like, I cannot believe he's going here. This is just crazy. Like, I just don't understand how you could possibly be led to believe something like this. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. If you start from a totally secular point of view like he does, then you have no problem going there. There are no parameters around existence. I should doubt everything. I should be a total skeptic. There's mm-hmm. probably nothing supernatural, right? And so I can't rule anything out. In fact, I have to, like, assume based on probability only. He mentioned the evolutionary spectrum at 1.2.
Yeah, the 10,000 years is very small in the
right
grand the grandness of the entire evolutionary process.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I don't know. I think we all kind of have a pretty good idea of where he's coming from as far as base assumptions of reality.
Yeah, obviously.
But I just think, you know, where we start from is completely different, and you could never arrive at that conclusion if you start from the Bible.
Yeah. The interesting thing about this argument, though, is that I find it really hard to disprove, even presuppositionally, because in this scenario, that our entire world is created by some person tinkering around with a computer, a massively advanced computer, would mean that everything, like, all proof that we have to any argument that we have is just a source of the computer. And it can be, you know, the computer can do whatever it wants and create a reality, you know, that it does. And, you know, that is just, I don't know. It's a very difficult argument to disprove, isn't it?
I have a bold assertion.
Yes.
This is kind of like last week, except our roles are... The turntables have turned, to quote the great Michael Scott. I am confident that if the Bible is true in all that it speaks to,
mm-hmm.
then it's impossible that we're in a simulation.
Hmm. Okay. Tell me more.
All right. I've been thinking about this since I heard him say it. I think it starts with the nature and character and work of God. If God is creator in the way that the Bible describes him being creator, if he is sustainer in the way that the Bible describes him being sustainer, mm-hmm. right? Then you have a God who creates everything. There is, at one point in time, there's nothing but God, right? Mm-hmm. And so God creates, we say, out of nothing, but really it's into nothing. There's nothing but him. And yet, by the power of his word, his authoritative word, he exercises control and authority as creator and ultimate power. And he brings everything into existence, right? Mm-hmm. If you can go that far, and you can trust the rest of what he says by nature of his character, then I think you can say we're not in a simulation.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting. But let me play a little devil's advocate here. Say that the world we're living in is simulated, and the one previous to us is base reality. And this world represents the past world. And someone decided to start us in like the 16th century. So to us, everything that is real in the world is real, and we're following off of that. But base reality is the actual world. It would still, like, the Bible would be still true, but in base reality, not our reality. See, that's the thing. This conversation can be so disprovable, because you can create anything to be true in this reality, even like quote unquote God's character, right? That's why this argument almost seems so ludicrous, because it is absolutely disprovable. It's absolutely undisprovable. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the problem, though, right?
Yeah.
I think I follow your first example there now. You're saying that what if we're in a simulation, someone came up with the Bible, and it was all their idea to begin with, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. I was thinking it was the reverse.
What's the reverse?
This simulation is literally following in the steps of the real world, 100%. So the real in the right. real world, God is real. I mean, yeah, that feels weird to say.
it is. I feel very blasphemous right now.
Yeah. But in this fake world, it's literally step by step. Like in the world, World War II happened. In the simulation, World War II happened. We're just like 400 years behind the real world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so essentially it won't matter, because whenever our real selves die, our real selves will go to heaven, and these selves that are in the simulation don't exist, and we won't ever remember. I don't know. It's weird to think about.
Yeah.
So one of the things that would I can't entertain some of the ideas that we've gone through so far, but that's okay. One of the things that the whole illustration assumes is that there is someone who built the simulation that put us in it, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Would you guys say that that's fair?
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And so that's...
Unless it was some rogue AI that decided to toy with artificial human minds. But yeah, it's still a creator.
I think even in that case, this works. And I think also, if you listen to Elon Musk closely, he envisions sort of another race of humans that are... Or maybe not even humans, but another race that is more intelligent than us. That would create this. So it's sort of multiple creators, a committee of creators, if you will, right,
yeah.
in his illustration. Mm-hmm. Either way, you have a person or a group of people who have created this simulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem. If the Bible's true and God is creator in the way that it refers to him as creator, then he created them too.
Right.
Right? That's the problem.
Right,
so, like,
yeah.
Let me read this. I was trying to find this. I was reading... Doctrine of God, A Theology of Lordship, John Frame. And it's really, really good. But here's a quote. The reason I'm bringing this up is I think we sometimes, at least for me, lose sight of everything that the Bible means when it uses the word creator, and everything that necessarily must flow from that as part of who God is and what he's like.
I agree that this concept is unbelievable, and I don't believe it. But Anyway, I did take a video game class in college and have just built random video games. And I have thought it's an enjoyable metaphor to consider God like a video game creator sometimes. Mm-hmm. And just thinking of it like whenever we create a video game, we may alter some of the laws, but essentially we're just recreating this world, obviously nowhere near close to it. But like we implement a physics engine. We have laws of physics because God implemented the world's best physics engine, is the mm-hmm. physics, the laws of physics. And we just try to mimic that and maybe play with gravity so you can jump higher or something. I mean, if you just think of senses, like in the game, you can see the world. So we mimic the sense of sight. God created the senses, like before, I mean, I would assume that's right. He created taste, touch, smell, all five senses plus whatever more. I've heard that there's actually like 20 senses, but I don't remember them all. But like, how could I come up with a new sense? You know, like,
yeah.
I could never come up with sight. It doesn't even make sense to me, but God did it. And so just, it's kind of fun to think of God as this programmer. And if I consider a game world, it was literally nothing, and then you create a game world from nothing. I mean, I know there's a computer there and code, and it draws mm-hmm. pictures and stuff, but if you can kind of see the metaphor that I'm driving at, I know it's not perfect because no metaphor is perfect, but I think I've always thought it's fun to think of God as just a game designer, and it leads me to praise him just for his creativity. I guess it's, for me, it's what often leads me to praise for creativity. I'm sure just looking at a mountain works for somebody else. But it's like, man, you created hearing. I could never do that. I've tried to build video games. What sense would I add to video games? You can't. You're just really copying some other sense that already exists. So anyway, I've always thought it was fun to do that. And it kind of works. We're in a simulation, God's simulation, where we'll not stop existing or whatever.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure you don't mean it in the deist sense where God's the clockmaker, right, either, though, where he just makes the clock and lets it spin.
No, I do not mean that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I knew you didn't. But
and I never do that either. If I make a game, then I start to mess around inside the game, too, you know? I force the things to happen. I define the story beforehand, and the characters just play through it.
Yeah, there you go. That's actually what I was trying to get into, was like, part of God's relationship as creator to the creation is that all that that entails is not just the material, the substance, but actually everything that takes place as well. Like, as, I don't know, I don't really want to be controversial here, but a reformed view of sovereignty includes all that. I couldn't find the quote I was looking for from John Frame, but this one's pretty good too. He's talking about Romans 11, and he says that Paul praises God's very incomprehensibility. And then this is the verse. Oh, the depths of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable his judgments and his paths beyond tracing out. Who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has been his counselor? Who has ever given to God that God should repay him? For from him and through him and to him are all things. To him be the glory forever. Amen. And he's commenting on that from him and through him and to him part. Mm-hmm. When he says this, these things are not just material objects, but also events, the judgments and the paths of verse 33, including God's judgments of Israel and his blessings of the Gentiles. God's involvement with his world is threefold, as its creator from him, its governor through him, and the ultimate purpose unto him of the whole world. God controls all things. And my argument is, if you can say that all three of those things are true of God, you can't say that we're in a simulation. That's all I got, though. You guys can still disagree.
No, I deeply respect your argument and the fact that you were able to argue with that argument that far. And Tank, what you were saying about just getting down to the granular level of God creating like the sense of sight or of touch or of hearing, like that just puts me so much more in awe of God's creative power. That's just amazing. The things that I perceive the world with didn't have to be, but God was the one who brought that into being, and that boggles my mind almost even more than the whole simulation discussion.
Nice.
So cool.
Another fun part of the video game metaphor is that if you play a video game, there's no way to know who the developers are unless you play one of those video games where they have little unlockables and you can read, this scene was developed in this way, or you stumble upon a picture of the developer in a castle or whatever. So the only way you can know who the developer is if the developer puts himself into the world somehow.
Revelation.
Yep, exactly.
Do you guys have any recos?
I have a reco. So my reco is going to be my trip updates. So as some of our regular listeners will know by now, my wife and I are going to Tokyo, Japan. We'll be leaving for training in about a month and a half now. And so we will be doing weekly to bi-monthly trip updates, text and videos. And so anyway, in the show notes is a link to my just personal website that all it is a sign-up form where you can get updates for my trip to Tokyo. And you can stay in touch with it outside the podcast. And hopefully I would very much appreciate your prayers for us and for the Japanese people.
Well, this is still Ben, and I don't have a reco this week. But if you would like to connect with us, you can jump on our Slack channel at slack.techreformation.com. You can sign up. It is free and awesome.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Reformation on both of those.
You can email us at ask@techreformation.com with any comments, questions, or feedback.
And you can visit our website to search for past shows and topics. We are a part of the Theology Mix Network. You can find a link to the website and the massive iTunes feed down in the show notes. Check out a bunch of the excellent podcasts they have over there.
This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. You're making Derek angry.
And the concept of replacing a laptop with an iPad. Oh, Anna.
I'm sorry. She wants my order from McAllister's.
I see.
And I just started singing songs in all capital letters in our iMessage.
Oh, poor Craig.
Mwahahaha.